From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special looking at the two-day summit of the European Union and the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, or CELAC. The region represented by CELAC, long treated by the U.S. as its backyard, is poised to be one of the major regions where competition between the U.S. and its EU allies and the BRICS countries, which includes Brazil and, of course, China, will take place over the coming years. Trade between the EU and CELAC stands at about $230 billion a year, while trade between China and CELAC currently stands at about $275 billion. That's expected to skyrocket in the next few years. This past January, China's President Xi Jinping set the goal for bilateral trade between the two at $500 billion a year within the next 10 years, which would move it into strong competition with the U.S. CELAC trade, currently at about $850 billion a year. China is investing more than $250 billion in the region over the next few years, much of it for infrastructure to support this jump in trade, including the Transoceanic Canal through Nicaragua and the Transcontinental Railroad that will link Peru's Pacific coast with Brazil's Atlantic ports. After the two-day summit involving senior officials from the 28-member EU and the 33-member CELAC group, EU Council President Donald Tusk, who co-chaired the summit with Ecuador's President Rafael Correa, serving as president of CELAC, spoke to the press.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. First, I invite President of the European Council, Donald Tusk, and Chair of the summit to take the floor.
Thank you very much, Preben. Good afternoon. We have just concluded our second EU CELAC summit. Let me first thank all the heads of state and government who attended. The high rate of participation from both sides of the Atlantic is a sign of the importance we attach to our partnership. And I also want to thank President Correa, who has co-chaired with me. Thank you very much, Rafael. I think it is a great sign of the vitality of this relationship that this summit was also accompanied by a number of parallel events organized and promoted by civil society, academics, business people, trade unions, youth and parliamentarians. This partnership is not just a political one. It is much more than that. The European Union and CELAC jointly account for one-third of the world's countries. Together we can have a decisive impact on, just to bring a few examples, the global climate talks, the post-2015 development agenda, and the fight against drugs. That is why we need to keep talking, keep getting closer together on the issues and aligning our approaches. This is why the European Union and the CELAC countries intend to take forward our political dialogue from here. From now on, we have decided that our foreign ministers will meet between summits to ensure swift follow-up of decisions made by leaders. And they will bring forward recommendations for how we deepen the relationship and how we can work together more substantively. To give you just one example, climate change matters to us both. Latin American and Caribbean countries are very vulnerable to this threat. That's one reason that the Paris talks later this year have to succeed and why the EU will continue providing support to the region through its Euroclimate program. We also discussed international and regional security. Chile and Colombia have already signed agreements with the EU to participate in crisis management operations, and we welcome other interest countries in the region to talk to us about this as well. The European Union supports the peace negotiations in Colombia and will back a future peace deal through the creation of an EU trust fund to support peace implementation. We are also supporting the process of modernization of in Cuba, which we hope will be reinforced when we finish talks on our political dialogue and cooperation agreement. I warmly welcome the steps towards full normalization of the relations between Cuba and the United States. The visa waiver agreements recently signed with five Caribbean states and just initialed with Colombia and Peru show our eagerness to bring our peoples closer together. After the entry into force of these agreements, more than 80% of citizens in the CELAC region will be able to enter the Schengen area without a visa. These openings are possible thanks to the good cooperation we have on security of documents and immigration. We will continue developing this in the weeks and months ahead. The CELAC region is very large and very diverse. For our partnership to be fully effective, we need to pay attention to sub-regional issues too. Today we will hold two high-level meetings, one with the heads of state and government of Central America and the other with the heads of state and government of the Caribbean countries. Finally, and importantly, just before the summit, we initialed an agreement that will transform the EU-LAC Foundation into an international body so that it can expand its work in promoting our partnership to our citizens. The EU will also continue its financial support to the foundation with 3 million euros over the next 2 years. Latin America and the Caribbean have become more prosperous and more confident, and CELAC embodies the region's ambition to achieve closer integration. This is something we have strongly supported from the very beginning. We can now confidently say, I am sure that President Correa agrees, that we are building a partnership of equals based on mutual benefit and mutual respect. The direct fiber optic cable that we agreed to build between our two continents is perhaps a simple but nonetheless strong symbol of our ever closer connection.
Buenos días a todas y a todos.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Primero quisiera, en nombre de más de 600 millones de latinoamericanos y caribeños, agradecer profundamente a la Unión Europea por la organización de esta cumbre y al Reino de Bélgica por habernos recibido, como siempre, con tanto cariño. También felicitaciones por el éxito en organización y un agradecimiento a nuestros equipos de trabajo. Unión Europea, CELAC, que dio muchos esfuerzos para que una cumbre de 61 jefes de Estado efforts to make sure that this summit of 61 heads of state has had the success it has had. Europa y América Latina,
in meetings between the EU and Latin America, and then subsequently Latin America and the Caribbean, those meetings began
político,
in 1999 with three areas, political and economic and cooperation.
Entonces,
and since that time,
humanos,
democracy,
derecho,
human rights, and the rule of law has consolidated in our region, and Europe has consolidated its union.
Introducción a este encuentro.
And as I said in my introduction to this summit, when I addressed the heads of state and government, we can learn from this example in Europe. We have different histories, different cultures, different languages, different religions, different political systems.
Soportaron dos terribles guerras mundiales.
But we know that Europe has gone through two horrendous world wars, but
unirse.
With a political will in place, they've managed to unite. However, in Latin America, we have everything in common, language, history, culture, and it's now time we consolidate our union. And I think that
en este año
Europe offers us a
cruciales.
Great example. There are
la
three crucial conferences ahead of us. The Development Financing Conference that will be held in Addis Ababa shortly. We have the post-2015 agenda meeting in New York in September, and we will be revising the Sustainable Development Goals. Many of the MDGs haven't been met, not even in part. We have to ensure there year that progress is made, and then we have the summit on climate change that will be held in Paris at the end of this year. This is why this meeting was so opportune. It gives us an opportunity to make sure that we'll play a decisive role in the decisions that are to be taken for the future of our planet. Climate change, we only have one planet. We have to work together towards that. We all agreed with the proposal that in December in Paris, we have to make sure we have a binding agreement, not just mere statements or declarations, but we have to have a legally binding agreement with contributions from all countries. We have to take care of the only planet that we have and combat the pandemic of climate change. It's not just a problem of poor countries. It's not just a problem for island states, it's a problem for all of us. It is for the future of humanity. We also talked about migration. We know the serious problem that is being suffered at the moment in Europe, and we know that the lack of opportunities in the countries of origin, the significant economic differences lies behind this. But we have to again here find global solutions. We're very open to dialogue and cooperation in that respect. And in particular, we talked about the new order of cooperation that is required by Latin America and the Caribbean. We are middle-income countries in the region, in CELAC. Before, cooperation was somewhat piecemeal. There was very much a distinction between the rural areas and urban areas. But what's key to development, ensuring welfare for all, in particular in the Latin American Caribbean countries, is human talent, science and technology. We talked a lot about all of that, about exchanges of teachers, support for universities, grant scholarships, but I think we also have to be more proactive to ensure that there is true substantive support for developing countries, that there be easier access to science and technology and know-how that has been generated in the most developed countries, with, of course, compensation that has to be offset by something, with innovation, because once we have created this technology, it has to be the service of the highest number of people possibly. We expressed our satisfaction with the fact that there's been a thawing in relations between Cuba and U.S. There has been a combat on the part of the Cuban people for decades for their sovereignty. We're very pleased that diplomatic ties have been restored between the two countries, but that's just the starting point. We have to remove this cruel, inhumane block embargo that has been imposed against Cuba that runs counter to the Inter-American Charter, etc. And we have to see the closure of the Guantanamo base. We know the absurd executive orders that have been issued by the U.S. saying that Venezuela is a serious threat to the internal security of America. Once again, they are acting in a legitimate legal fashion. It's unilateral sanctions, which of course break with the Inter-American Charter. We are also keen to see a solution to the conflict in Cuba, the longest conflict on our planet, in our continent, and we offer full support to President Santos in this very valiant initiative to find, seek peace in Colombia. We would also like to express solidarity with Argentina in renegotiating the situation for the Falklands. We know that there have been contradictions expressed regarding the sovereignty of a country, and we know there are very legitimate arguments that have also been put forward with regard to the vulture funds. The EU and CELAC are two regions which share fundamental principles, so the supremacy of international law, human rights, democracy, the right to all humanity to be able to live well in dignity. We are continuing to work on those principles, and we hope to continue this very much into the future. Thank you once again, President.
Thank you very much.
That was the President of Ecuador, Rafael Carrera, who is also the Acting President of CELAC, he was preceded by the President of the European Council, Donald Tusk. And now for more on the conference, we go to our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting live from Managua, Nicaragua.
Let's jump right into it. Big news this week. We both agreed when we were chatting before, the CELAC, the EU CELAC conference, and the context of that taking place. Well, the EU is wrangling with Greece.
Yeah, I read the declaration a couple of times from the summit, and I haven't actually been reading all the speeches. Perhaps you'll be able to fill me in if I get anything. Slightly off key in terms of an appreciation of the meaning of the exchanges that took place during the summit.
I got it.
But the first thing I'd like to point out, Don, is that, and I don't know what you've seen in the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the Los Angeles Times, or any of the North American media, but in the English language European media, as far as they're concerned, there was no summit.
Yeah, I wanted to just do like a little teaser yesterday for the news. And, you know, so I went looking at the Times and the Washington Post just for like a, you know, two paragraph that I could, you know, write a little reference to it about it. And they didn't have anything.
No. Likewise, the European English language media. I don't know about the other European language media, but certainly in the English language media I read. The summit was completely obliterated. Yeah. They just didn't report it.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
It might be the most important event. You know, this might be the most important event in, you know, I mean, the thing itself is only what it is. But with the convergence of forces at this particular moment between the EU and CELAC and Greece, and in front of Spain, looking at the election later this year, to me, it's a remarkably, it's like a potential pivot point for history.
Well, yeah, yes and no.
Not intrinsically, just symbolically.
Yeah, my take was I was very much looking at details. For example, and I don't agree with the coverage that you'll see, for example, in Telesur and elsewhere,
yeah,
where they say that the summit came out with a strong declaration supporting the end of the embargo against Cuba and the lifting of the presidential finding that Venezuela constitutes a serious threat to the security of the United States.
Right.
And that is not the case when you read the declaration.
Right. Yeah, they you know, in front of the cameras for the sound bites, they're compelled by the existing relation, they're compelled in any event by circumstances to make it sound very collegial. Like we heard one of the statements that came out of either Juncker or the other, Tusk, in talking about congratulating the United States and Cuba for helping to normalize their relations and all that crap. But they are very, you know, if the United States said tomorrow, shut it down with Cuba, they'd be like, oh, we did yesterday. So, I mean, everyone knows that, I think, particularly in Latin America.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that you can see that there's a stark contrast between the declarations of leaders like Rafael Correa, the Cuban vice president, who made that really was historic, I think, that Cuba made a speech at that summit. I do agree that was a historic moment.
Yep.
But the actual nitty gritty of what was agreed was very, very tame.
Right.
And very, very ambivalent. And so you get if you read the declaration, you get the European Union simply restating its long-held position that the United States legislation against Cuba violates international trading norms.
Right.
You know, and that's been their position for a long, long time. There's no change there. And what you get in Venezuela is that the declaration simply notes that the United States position vis-a-vis Venezuela may not be helpful.
Right.
You know, and that's, right. You know, and if you, and then, that, But there are different levels to it, aren't there, Don?
Well, domestic politics. Let's look at, like, for example, in the EU, again, given the current situation, I mean, Varoufakis spoke in front of pretty much all of Europe the other day. And I you know, gave you my little critique before. But, you know, the essence of it was he gave this really interesting and unusual for public discussion in Western Europe and in the United States, I would say unprecedented here, detailing the nature of the crisis in Europe, not just in Greece, but in Europe's underlying crisis, how they got there, you know, the history leading up to it, some of the good, bad, and ugly, an analysis of where things are at, and a proposal that he argued for. First, he laid out very clearly, and he argued for. This happened in front of the whole of Europe. So if these guys came out with, like, a typical American-written EU statement about it, and, you know, demanding the imposition of neoliberal economic measures in CELAC and all that kind of crap, that wouldn't even play to their own constituents at home, because the political configuration in Europe is in flux right now, and potentially in much greater flux depending on a number of variables. And so they got to kind of, it almost sounds to me like a Democratic Party convention where they try to sound like the left while they're laying out the program of the right.
Yeah, and you're referring to the European Union positions at the CELAC summit, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, but you have to, and you and I have slightly different takes on Greece, don't we? I Varoufakis is a Democrat, and he's a true Democrat,
right.
Somebody who believes in popular participation, listening to what the needs, not just of the majority, but taking into account the interests of minorities as well. And he's that kind of true, genuine Democrat, not in the U.S. party political sense.
Right.
And what he's up against is the fact that the European Union is controlled by the elites.
It's an oligarchy.
And so, you can see, it's just so obvious, isn't it, that in what Germany and the others are doing to the people of Greece. So then when you shift that into an interregional exchange, what you've got are representatives of the European elites, whose natural allies are not the progressive governments of Latin America and the Caribbean. Their natural allies are the Venezuelan opposition, the Cuban opposition, the Argentinian opposition, the Brazilian opposition. Those are their natural allies. So then when you get this high-level diplomatic exchange, and it's ridiculously optimistic to think that you're going to get anything out of it beyond what it did in fact appear, which was this Brussels declaration from this CELAC European Union summit.
Yeah, verbal
which is full of bromides,
right,
you know,
yeah,
and
exactly.
It can be interpreted in all kinds of ways. And it was very interesting. And earlier, before we started talking about Greece, I was going to say that there are different levels and different aspects and different perspectives, aren't there? Because from the point of view of Argentina, for example, one thing that very much didn't appear was any mention of the Malvinas or any mention of colonial residual legacies like the Dutch Caribbean territories or the French Martinique and Guadeloupe and French Guiana, the French overseas territories. Right. Now, never mind Puerto Rico.
Did anybody say reparations? Did anybody ask about reparations, for example? No, of course we understand
that. Well, of course
this.
Not. Yeah, right. But that's a sign of how limited and how kind of incomplete and impossible to complete that the summit was. It was a kind of mission impossible to actually have a serious talk about things, which is what Varoufakis was trying to do in his exposition. Now, if you listen to Varoufakis, I didn't listen to his presentation that you mentioned just now, but I've seen various of Varoufakis's expositions on the web, and what always strikes me is that he's talking about ALBA.
Yeah, of course.
He's talking about a progressive application of solidarity-based policies,
right,
whereby one nation, the strengths of one nation complement the weaknesses of another nation, and which is what the EU was originally supposed to be about, and that it's turned into a kind of a vast economic garrote that the elites apply to vulnerable peoples, like the people of Greece, or like the people of Ireland, or like the people of Portugal.
Right.
And it just seems that what one might have hoped for from this summit was something like that, some kind of acknowledgement, some kind of sign of a shock between the ALBA solidarity-based model, which is very much the driving motor behind CELAC, ultimately, because it all derives from the decision by CELAC itself. In my opinion, and people might disagree, but I think it derives from the decision by Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez back in 2004 to promote ALBA and to promote regional integration and to not let ideology get in the way of the more important development, overall economic development of the region on behalf of the impoverished majority. That was their vision.
That's right. Yep. Listen, as somebody who spent a lot of time in conference rooms and boardrooms in right here in New York in the belly of the beast, to put it in simple terms, what Varoufakis was saying that he was drawing as a lesson from CELAC and from the other integration groupings in Latin America, hey, let's cut the crap and make some money together.
Right.
And he laid it out in detail how they could do it and how the plans they have were going to do nothing but hollow all of them out.
Right. And you can see that in the way, for example, one of the features, and going back to the different aspects and different perspectives, and let's set aside the ALBA perspective for a moment and look at the Mercosur perspective. And Mercosur is the common market of Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Bolivia, which is now a member of Mercosur, and Venezuela too. Venezuela is also a member of Mercosur now. So, and Mercosur negotiating one of these misnamed free trade agreements. They're not free trade agreements. They're investment, pro-corporate investment agreements that relieve transnational corporations and Western investors of all kinds of barriers and that otherwise protect the peoples of the countries with whom they're trying to negotiate this misnamed trade deal.
Right.
And the Mercosur countries, it was very interesting. There seems to be a strong disagreement between Argentina and Brazil, because Dilma Rousseff said that she's anxious to close some kind of agreement with the EU quickly. And Argentina's Timmerman, the foreign secretary, said there was no way that they were going to rush into an agreement with the European Union. And then to top that, you got Evo Morales saying, if Mercosur signs any a free trade deal with the European Union, Bolivia will withdraw from Mercosur.
Right.
Now that is very, very, and that gives you, that presents another possible take on what is the meaning of this recent summit in Brussels.
Right.
And one of the possible meanings is that the EU is trying to Trojan horse its way into breaking up the kind of progressive regional integration that the ALBA countries are pushing for and that Argentina's pushing for, and perhaps to a lesser extent Brazil, in favor of an integration process that's more based on this spurious free trade, free market nonsense that has been so destructive in the United States and Europe. But even so, the elites still push it because it's good for them.
Right.
And they're trying to push that via their allies in the region, Peru, Colombia, Chile and Mexico, and to a lesser extent, Guatemala, Costa Rica and Panama. And that's another possible take on why the language of the declaration from this summit is so, in many ways, equivocal.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.